2. Rule Britannia? The Glorious Revolution, it turned out, was something less than glorious. It was not even, leading Tories and Whigs would both agree, a revolution, not a rising of the English people against intolerable tyranny, but the abdication of one king and his replacement by another. The balance of powers at the top of government shifted. The king lost sovereign power and became a limited constitutional monarch whose authority remained to be clarified. Old aristocratic Tories, champions of James II, lost their grip, while new ones, triumphant Whigs, competed for place. The year 1689 resembled more than anything a reshuffle of elites far above the heads of the people. That was how England's rulers meant it to be. Even for the Whigs who accomplished it, revolution was an alarming term, reminiscent of the upheaval and violence that had attended the rebellion against Charles I and the triumph of Cromwell. Now the aim was not a revolutionary new order, but stability. After 2 brutal centuries of religious violence, civil wars, coups and failed coups, and horrendous slaughters, chaos and upheaval would now rarely spill beyond the political battlegrounds of Westminster and the royal palaces in London and Windsor. The 1689 Act of Toleration diffused strife among Protestant sects, though it excluded Unitarians, Catholics, and atheists from what John Locke called the establishment of equal liberty. Locke would be credited with the revolution's intellectual leadership. His 2 treatises of government seen as its most effective apologia. But the settlement of 1689 was hardly the enactment of Enlightenment principles espoused by radical Whigs like Locke. Though Whig moderates extolled its perfection of liberty, it seemed designed to deny the most unsettling of Locke's doctrines, principles that were, as one clergyman declared from the pulpit, fit for nothing but to ruin.